This is Microphone Check, hip-hop from NPR Music. I'm Franny Kelly.
I'm Ali Shaheed Muhammad.
And I'm J. Cole. Oh, that was me. That was my moment.
Cole World, you got to keep it just like that. You got to keep the awkward pause so people can hear that I wasn't ready.
Done. We will.
Yo, I'm happy you're here because you're our first return guest.
Really?
Oh, yeah, you are.
That's what's up, man. I had to come back.
Thank you.
I never forgot the first one. The first interview was legendary. I appreciate that. That was really insightful. And it was slept on, too, man. I was slept on.
Agreed.
Yeah, slept on. So, I want to come back and have this one unslept on.
Well, we're still, I think, slept on heavily in our position. Mm-hmm. And we're freshmen still, so the fact that you came back really, I feel like, we could put a star up on the board because, we're coming for you.
Word up. Well, it makes me feel proud to even, to be that because I did appreciate the quality of that last one. And I feel like, I'm slept on myself, brother. So we all just trying to get, we all trying to get there. And if I can help, I'm honored to do that.
Well, you're back, fresh new album, Forest Hill Drive.
Yeah. 2014 Forest Hills Drive in stores right now. Just came out December 9th. I'm feeling amazing, man. Blessed.
Why did you decide to do it at the end of the year versus just going into 2015?
Oh, the date, and the address lined up. It corresponds perfectly. So that title is the address of a house that I lived in, the last house that I lived in Fayetteville, North Carolina, from age maybe 11 to 18. So 7 good years of my life. Like, those are potent years. And we moved. I would have to give y'all a very long backstory that I like to give, but we don't have the time. But basically, I didn't grow up. My parents got divorced before I was like of conscious age. But when the divorce was final, we had to move from this military base to like this real, real rough neighborhood, this trailer park, and not like Eminem 8 Mile, Kid Rock style. Like, this is just the hood on wheels. You know what I mean? This is like, so from that neighborhood, which really woke me up. That neighborhood was like a reality check for me, because I was like four or five, and I remember what the other neighborhood was like, which was like safe, you know what I mean? And then this neighborhood was like, this, okay, it's a little different over here. Like, I got to walk my shoulders up in this place. And it was just like, it really showed me like, okay, the world is more like this and not like that place you was living at. And from there, we moved to this house on Lewis Street, which is really, really tiny house. But compared to that neighborhood, it was amazing. And then my mom would eventually meet her boyfriend, who would become my stepfather. And they got married, combined their two $30,000 incomes, and we've just entered another tax bracket, you know what I'm saying? And then we moved to Forest Hills Drive, which was like a life-changing experience for me because I got my own room. We had a front yard. We had a driveway. It was just a real, nice home. That felt like we really was barely in there. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And when I moved away to college, mind you, that's the house that I started rapping in. I got my first beat machine, made my first beats, wrote my first song, first girlfriends, first crushes, made the basketball team, got my first jobs, learned how to drive. All these memories associated with adolescence was in this house. So, it's a special place to me. My mother, it was a place for her where this marriage that she probably absolutely wasn't supposed to be in the first place, she watched that deteriorate, in that house. So for me, it's like amazing memories. I got my own room. I really became a loner and real introverted and like,
discover the world and your placement in the world.
Right. And just got to develop myself. But for her, it was like, okay, this thing failed. And so by the time I went away to school to New York to come to college, my first semester at school, I got a call from her saying that she got a letter in the mail, and the letter basically was saying that she was 4 months back on her mortgage payments, which my stepfather was supposed to be taking care of. He was in the Army, too. He assigned himself to go to Thailand. The agreement was that he would make the mortgage payments while he was gone. because you get separation pay, extra pay for being overseas away from your family. So the agreement was he make the mortgage payment. She gets a letter in the mail basically saying it hasn't been made in 4 months. That's $3,200. Please, we need that right now. $3,200 is like $1 million. There's no way she's ever coming up with that type of money. And so she just panicked, left the house, and they came and foreclosed the house. You know what I mean? All this time I was away in school, really powerless. So that always left a sour taste in my mouth, the way that house got snatched from us. You know what I mean? Because college is like, you know, that Christmas is coming up right now. The kids are taking their finals right now. They about to be done.
Go home.
Right. That's the real comforting feeling, to be able to go home and you know, sleep in that same bed that you've been sleeping in and use the same dishes and the same covers and you know where everything is at. And I didn't get that. So that always left a sour taste in my mouth. I know that's a long story, but that's why it had to come out in 2014, because last year, New Year's, you know, every New Year's you think to yourself, like, man, it's about to be whatever it's about to be. Like, man, it's about to be the year 2000, or it's about to be 1999. Well, last year I was like, dang, it's about to be 2014. And right when I said that, it all clicked, because that was always my favorite number. You know what I mean? Just for that house. I always loved 2014. And that's when I knew, like, okay, that's the title of the album, and that album got to come out in the year 2014. And this is the year I bought a house back. You know what I mean?
You bought the house back?
Yeah, I bought the house back this past summer. Wow. My first house I ever owned is that house right there.
Well, 2014, if you're into numbers, I don't really know about all that. I'm still learning the world, but that's the number 7, and it's a God number. So it's kind of, it's interesting.
Wow, I didn't know that at all.
I'm really happy it came out at the end of the year, because a lot of albums came out this year that were good, but I really love this album.
Thank you, man. Thank you very much.
And, you know, you do your year-end reviews on what was good, what was great, and I felt this year that I just, things were good, but then this just came in, and it's like, yeah, this is a great album, and
Thank you.
I'm happy it came at the end of the year.
Yeah, me too.
Actually, I
feel the same way. Everything happens for a reason, man. I feel that. I wanted it to come September. Like, the whole year, I was in the studio working, like, yeah, I can't wait. It's lining up. I'll be ready by September. I started working in March, late March, April. That's when I officially started working. I was like, I have it ready by September. And then when it wasn't, I started stressing a little bit, and I was like, wait a minute, man. Everything's cool. Everything's happening for a reason. Like, just relax. So I think you're right. Yeah, I love the fact that everybody was saying, this is the worst year for hip-hop. Hip-hop is terrible this year. Nobody's selling. And forget the sales. Nobody's good. Like, the albums are trash. I was loving it, because the whole time they were saying that, I was, like, sitting there like, yeah, it was just watch. Like, you know, you just watch. Give me 2 months. You're going to see. Like, so I like how that worked out.
It sounds great. And can we just go right in for a moment? I wanted to ask specifically, after listening to Fire Squad, and I won't ask the obvious question that, you know, you may have already gotten.
No, I haven't. And by the way, I haven't done any interviews since
what?
The album came out.
No, we number one?
Your first one.
Oh, thank you.
And
thank you.
I almost didn't do, no disrespect, but I almost didn't do this because I really debated doing interviews for the album, period.
I understand.
But I was like, you know what? Don't let me do it. I don't want to do this album a disservice. So this is the first one, man. Thank y'all.
Okay, well, regarding Fire Squad, I want to know, when was the first time that you realized you were free?
That I was free.
That's a dope question,
yeah,
Ali. It's
a fire question, but I don't know if I am free, man.
Really?
Yeah, that's real. I mean, like, I don't know, man. I feel like we all, we could go into some whole other stuff, but we're all, like, slaves to something, you know what I mean? Like,
let's go there. I mean, yeah. I understand
you know,
that
we're
answer,
all slaves
especially,
to something.
Especially, you know, from like Note to Self and Love Yours. So I kind of get that you would say that, but I get a sense that something occurred. I don't know within.
Yes. Well, if that's the question, then I have an answer for that.
All
the
right.
Other question is like, it's a loaded question because I don't feel that I'm all the way free. You know what I mean? I don't feel like any of us are, unless we're super evolved and super, like, spiritually evolved and, like, you know, you're just living, you're a Buddhist monk and you don't really need, you know, it's like those guys are free. But in terms of when did I realize I was free, when I know your question is basically, when did I let go of whatever it was I was holding on to in the past. And mm-hmm. and it's when I realized that the way I was feeling during, like, the last 5 years, when I should have been very happy and very appreciative and very, you know, on cloud nine because I'm literally living out my dreams, I was realizing that I wasn't liking how I was feeling. You can listen to Born Sinner, you can listen to Sideline Story and, like, hear it coming out. I wasn't happy, you know what I mean? And I had to take a step back or take a step inside, take a look inside and be like, why is that? Why don't I feel good? Like, why am I anxious all the time and stressed and, like, when I should be feeling blessed? And I realized it was the things I was holding on to.
Why you acting like a hoe? Know that I'ma ride for you, either way it go. Tell me, girl, why you be stressing me for time? When you tell me you love me, can't you see I'm trying to climb? Then my nigga, why you acting like a bitch? If you scared to take a chance, how the fuck we gon' get rich? Come here, baby, why you always insecure? Hold on tight to a nigga and be sure.
Yeah, ain't no way around it no more. I am the greatest. Lot of niggas set on the throne. I am the latest. I am the bravest. Go toe to toe with the giants. I ain't afraid of you niggas. I'll end up fading you niggas before it's all said and done. This nigga need better sun. My Uzi, it weighed a ton. I need me a better gun. In fact, I just might need two. Cause niggas say they the one. And I got something to prove. Forgive me, Lord, here they come. Blah!
Nigga, why you acting like a hoe? Know that I'ma ride for you, either way it go. Tell me, girl, why you be stressing me for time? When you tell me you love me, can't you see I'm trying to climb? Then my nigga, why you acting like a bitch? If you scared to take a chance, how the fuck we gon' get rich? Come here, baby, why you always insecure? Hold on tight to a nigga and be sure.
My inhibitions, fighting my intuition. Premature premonition, showing me the demolition of these phony niggas. So ahead of my time, even when I rhyme about the future, I be reminiscing. You want the truth, well come and listen. I'm like that time you bagged a diamond, checked your phone and saw what's the number missing. It's fate passes you by, half of you dry, the other half of you fried. Too high to actually fly, one day you'll have to decide who you gon' be. A scary nigga or a nigga that's gon' rule like me. Keep it true like me, cold you might be. Like the new Ice Cube, meets the new Ice-T. Meets Two Life Crew, meets the new Spike Lee. Meets Bruce like Wayne, meets Bruce like Lee. Meets O2 Lil Wayne, in a new white tee. Meets KD, ain't no nigga that can shoot like me. Blah!
Nigga, why you acting like a hoe? Know that I'm a ride for you, either way it go. Tell me, girl, why you be stressing me for time?
Expectations. Okay. Expectations, like, you know, stuff that doesn't matter. External things that I have no control over. Mm. What other people think about me. You know what I mean? Like, where I rank in NPR's final end of the year album list or Rolling Stone magazine called Crooked Smile the 30-something best song of the year, but they ain't put Power Trip on there. They ain't crazy. Like, and this song is over it. Like, you know, those things were silly because it's placing your, you know, basically I was basing my happiness. Some people base their happiness off of, you know, material things, money, you know, women or whatever. I was basing my happiness off of success or what I thought was success. And anytime this is what the album is all about. Anytime you base your happiness on something that is not real, you know what I mean? Like something that's unattainable or never satisfying. You can never have enough money if money is what you seek. You know what I mean? Right. Like you'll never have enough. You'll never have enough success if success is what you seek. You'll always be reaching. And I realized that if you're trying to attain something that's unattainable, you will never be happy. You will always be in a pattern of like temporary happiness and satisfaction. Like, oh, I got it. And then right before you know it, you'll be like, I need another raise. I need another business. I need another million. I need another Grammy. You know what I mean? And I realized that I got to base my happiness on what I have. You know what I mean? Which is like, the people I have in my life, the love I have in my life, the you know, just the moments I have, the simplest things. It could be the shoes that I have on that I love. It could be, even though that's a material thing, it's like I'm appreciating how they feel on my feet. It could be the relationship I have with my mother. She's alive. Yeah, there's a lot of people that don't have their mothers alive that they can still have that relationship. So it's like that was the point. I know I'm rambling, but that was the point where I realized, like, wait a minute, I got to make a change inside.
Do you remember that moment? And where you were?
No, it was gradual.
It's over.
It was gradual. Absolutely gradual. And then making this album, all my projects are like this. I be writing it out. Like, it's almost like I write the song before I have the full realization. Mm. It's like subconsciously I'm knowing these things, but I'm never fully conscious of it until I get through writing it. And then, I'll come back a few months later and be like, oh, man, that was potent.
Have you had a couple of lines that you wrote it out and then later on after performing it, you realize, like, another layer on top of it, what it's meant?
That's a good question. I know I have. And now I'm trying to think of...
Don't worry about it.
Yeah, but no, that's a great question, by the way. That's one of those questions that... The answer will come on stage while I'm performing it, and it'll flee, it'll go away. But yes, I have those moments where it's like, wow, that line means, you know, it's even more potent now that I've been through even more.
Well, it comes off like you're free, but I understand that, you know, there are levels of freedom.
Right.
And freedom, awareness of freedom and what you have liberated yourself from or have been liberated from.
Creative freedom, yes. Creatively free. Free as I've ever been, absolutely.
The album feels good. It doesn't feel heavy at all. And I like that from a production level. First, I want to definitely, who's your mix engineer?
Oh, man, Mez. Jerome Mez Davis. I'm so glad you asked that question. I'm proud of that dude,
big,
man.
Big him up because it sounds great.
Thank you, bro.
And in the midst of all the other more popular hip-hop songs, you went in a different direction.
And Thank you, man. It's
a touch of the classic, but it's new and fresh on top of it.
Thank you, bro.
So.
Yo, you know what's crazy? I gotta say this, too, about, because he'll be real happy about this, and it was a real, like, decision. People don't understand the decisions that go into making an album. You know what I mean? Like, the scenes I had to cut to make this album. At one point, this was a double album, and making those cuts was so hard. Mm. And certain decisions like that are so hard to do. And one of those decisions was at the end, me and Mez had to make this decision. It's like, when you go to master an album, we're now involved in something called the noise war, or the loudness war, or something like that. You can Google it. And we're literally a part of that generation that is like, caught in this loudness war, right? And basically what that means is when they go to master your album in hip-hop, and maybe even in rock too, but I know for sure with hip-hop.
Pop, yes.
The whole point of mastering now is to see who can go the loud, who can get the music the loudest.
Every part of it.
Every part of the music the absolute loudest. So when it's on the radio, when it's in the club, it's the loudest thing possible without messing it up. So now what you have is the albums are so loud. It's like, you know, so basically what I had to do was when I went to master, I had to make a decision. We made a decision to not compete in that, to take a step back and to go the opposite way and to have an album that plays lower. And that's like it was a big decision for us because what you get is you can't hang in the club the same as like, you know, as like a Drake record or like, you know, or any modern day hot record. It could be a Meek Mill record or something or Rick Ross, but it's like, the last foreverness is more because you're not trying to blow their ears out. You know what I mean?
And well, there's clarity though when you come back
too.
And
yes,
so everything, all the frequencies. I have to say, I'm guilty of the times of being conditioned to the way things are mastered today. And even just on my way to the interview, I went to like turn everything up more. I was like, man, I want to hear it louder.
Word.
You know, but I realized when I did that, I was like, but it's perfect where it is.
Mm.
But it's clear, very clear. The frequencies everything comes across well, the bass and the kick drum. Like, you got a couple songs with tight kick drums, and I know, like, the NPR people might not really be that interested in the technical aspects of it.
Word.
Nah, don't lower your expectations.
Let's not downplay these people.
Yeah.
But it just, like, I felt everything, you know?
Thank you, man.
So it sounds really good, and I think that, you know, sometimes mix engineers, they come in, they're part of the team, they don't really get celebrated. And
Mez, you know, shout out to Mez, man.
Shout out to
Dynamic Range. That's what you do. That's what you get when you. That's what you lose when you participate in the loudness war, and that's what you get back when you don't. Is Dynamic Range.
Yeah. Word. The album sounds great just from that.
Thank you.
But you know,
yo, Ali. Yes? Let me ask some questions.
Sorry.
We rocking right now, man.
How much time do we have?
Man, we good, man. We good.
All right.
We probably have a half hour. We'll come back and we'll cut it up in it, and I won't be rude.
Nah, be rude.
Yeah, you gotta let it play. You gotta let them hear all of this, man. They gotta hear it.
But I wanna ask some questions that, like, I have, but also I'm sure that you've seen feedback on social media and people have been talking to you and everything, but a lot of people came up to me, and I know, like, security talked to you downstairs and everything, but, like, yeah, people are feeling very, very emotional about the album. And I think it started with Be Free in August.
Wow.
But not even that. It was that you went there. And then also that you only gave that one interview while you were there. And by far the majority of the questions that people have asked me to ask you is, like, why don't other people do that? And was it scary for you? Like, what is the risk?
I don't know the risk. I'm not aware of the risk. I don't really see a risk.
Then why the hell doesn't?
Oh, their risk. Their risk is money. You know what I mean? And, like, you know, sponsorships, and ultimately, or the risk is, like, I mean, my risk is, like, ultimately, I don't want to put myself, or I'm scared to not be capable of handling the weight. You know what I mean? Like, I believe deeply in the things that I believe in. And, like, if you know me, you know I'm passionate about these things. I'm talking about them every day. But at the same time, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know the law. I'm not a historian. I'm not equipped on my history. You know, I know a little bit, probably more than somebody, but I'm not, like, you know, I don't feel like the best candidate to be the voice of the generation. You know what I mean? Like, in a sense, like, even if people look at it like, oh man, I'm like, so maybe that's what they risk, is like they don't feel
equipped,
maybe. I don't know. Other than that, it's money and sponsorships, and, like, you don't want to rub people the wrong way, I'm assuming. But I also can't speak for other people. I don't know what it is. Why don't other people do it? I wish I knew the answer, because I don't want to be the only, it ain't cool being the only one. You know what I mean? That's not, when it comes to issues like this, that's not something that is cool to be there. It's cool to be the only guy with the new car. That's cool. It's not cool to be the only guy that's trying to say something or trying to be down for a movement. You know what I mean? That's not cool.
I'm in denial, and it don't take no x-ray to see right through my smile. I know I be on the go, and it ain't no drink out there that can numb my soul. Oh no, and all we wanna do is take the chains off. All we wanna do is break the chains off, man. All we wanna do is be free. All we wanna do is be free. All we wanna do is take the chains off. All we wanna do is break the chains off, man. All we wanna do is be free. All we wanna do is be free. Can you tell me why? Every time I step outside, I see my niggas die. Oh, I'm letting you know that it ain't no gun they make that can kill my soul. Oh no. Say, all we wanna do is take the chains off. All we wanna do is take the chains off.
All we want to do is be free. All we want to do is be free. All we want to do is take the chains off. All we want to do is break the chains off. All we want to do is be free. All we want to do is be free.
So that was like the officers pulling him inside the car. He's trying to pull away. And at no time the officer said that he was going to do anything until he pulled out his weapon. His weapon was drawn and he said, I'll shoot you or I'm going to shoot. And in the same moment, the first shot went off. And we looked at him. He was shot and it was blood coming from him. And we took off running.
Are we all alone fighting on our own? Please give me.
One of our producers was like, I know people who, he's from Ferguson, actually.
Wow.
And he said that he knows people who are buying the album, like, unheard, just on general principle. Just because you went.
That's crazy. Well, I would say that they're going to love it when they get it because, because the things that I'm saying and the messages I'm giving are right in line with, you know, I didn't put Be Free on the album because I didn't really want to distract. You know what I mean? That was like a separate moment outside of me working on the album.
The intro kind of refers to it in a way, though.
Yes, I made those around the same, in the same week. I made those songs in the same week. But at the same time, the message, which is what ultimately all this comes down to, is love, ultimately. It's like that's the only thing that can solve all of this. Like, I find myself some days getting so upset, and I forget about that part. You know what I mean? Like, I let the angerness and the anger and the bitterness, excuse me, angerness, that's a new word. The anger and the bitterness, like, build up and, like, come out. But on my best days, I know that that's not going to get it done. You know what I mean? That's not going to bring people together, ultimately, not in the best way. You know what I mean? Anger and bitterness, like, lead to hatred. And that's not going to get it done. So on my worst days, I let that come out. On my best days, I understand that, no, like, it's, and I think bigger when I think about love. I think about the bigger solution. When I'm coming from a place of, like, anger, it's such a small, because I'm always thinking about, I know this is random, but I'm not being clear. Every day, often, I'm thinking about solutions in my mind. Like, what is the solution? Like, what, especially when, like, for instance, when the Darren Wilson non-indictment came, that was, like, the biggest slap in the face that, like, I feel like we needed, actually. America needed that. Black America needed that smack in the face so we could see what it really is. Mm-hmm. But when that happens, my mind, instantly, the way my mind works is like, all right, what's the answer?
Yeah.
What can we do? What's the solution? And when I'm thinking from a place of anger and bitterness, the answers are so small. They're so small. They don't come to me right. But when I'm thinking from a place of, like, you know, when I know that love is ultimately, like, the answers are big. You know what I mean? It's like big ideas. Like, oh, okay. Yeah, that could work. Okay, we could do it. Like, you know, it's like, so I don't know really what the question was, but I'm, you know, I'm rambling at this point.
No, but I think you're speaking directly to this record because it comes across. I think the one thing about what I get from your art is that you completely are uninhibited in your expression and whatever it is that you may be going through or maybe you're thinking. I don't know what your process is, but, like, for example, you have a song like Wet Dreams, and it's just, like, really clear and, like, kind of from a less than maybe what someone would say clean sort of perspective about that experience. Mm-hmm. It's just, like, raw. This is, I imagined and remember that time in my life, you know?
Cold world. Yeah. Let me take y'all back, man. As I do so well. Wasn't nothing like that, man. It wasn't nothing like that first time. She was in my math class. Long hair, brown skin with the fat ass. Sat beside me, used to laugh, had mad jokes. The teacher always got mad, so we passed notes. It started off so innocent. She had a vibe and a nigga started digging it. I was a young and straight crushing, trying to play this shit cool. But a nigga couldn't wait to get to school. Cause when I seen them thighs on her and them hips on her and them lips on her, got me daydreaming, man, what? I'm thinking how she rides on it, if she sits on it, if she licks on it, make it hard for me to stand up. As time goes by, attractions getting deeper. Wet dreaming, thinking bragging that I'm smashing, but I'm sleeping. I want it bad, and I ain't never been obsessed before. She wrote a note that said you ever had sex before. Damn, and I ain't never did this before, no. 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 I wrote back and said, of course I had sex before, knowing I was frontin'. I said, I'm like a pro, baby, knowing I was stuntin'. But if I told the truth, I knew that I'd get played out, son. Hadn't been in pussy since the day I came out one, but she don't know that, so she done wrote back and told me, oh, you a pro, homie? Well, I want you to show me. My mama gone for the weekend, so Saturday, baby, we can get the freakin'. That's when my heart start racing and my body start sweating. Baby, you done woke my little man up. I'm thinking how that body look naked when you laying on the bed. Teacher, please don't make me stand up. I wrote back like, yeah, baby, sound like a plan. Still trying to play it cool, sound like the man. But I was scared to death, my nigga, my stomach turned. Talking shit, no. And damn well I was a virgin. Fuck. And I ain't never did this before, no. And I ain't never did this. And I ain't never did this before, no. And I ain't never did this before.
And so you didn't kind of like clean it up, but then at, you know, you start there, but you go throughout the record, and it's all these other emotions, and where you end off is exactly, I think, what you're talking about. So
yes, can I say something too?
Yeah.
It's the album is chronological. Like I didn't want to. I'm actually grateful because I saw some not reviews. I saw some like summaries of the album, right? Like plot summaries of the album, basically, where like, you know, people who had were listening and digested the album, obviously since the leak, they had figured out the storyline of the album, which I told y'all the inspiration behind the album, why the name is what it is, but I didn't, you know, we didn't talk about how the album is set up. It's set up as a story, like a movie.
Yeah.
And not literally like where I have, you know, skits and things like that. No, it's like
movement of life.
Exactly. Movement of life. And if it goes chronologically and follow my life progressions of this kid that wants so bad to be a movie star and so bad to be famous and to have things, and you can follow the beginning of the album and all these things that he wants. On January 28th, after I'm asking, do you want to be happy? Do you want to be free? On January 28th, first words in the beginning is, can I make $1 million off a rap tune? That's the first question I ask on January 28th before getting into it. The next song, Wet Dreams, what do I want? Women. I'm fiending for women on that song, want a woman. The next song after that, 03 Adolescence, is like, I'm fiending for this girl that I can't have because she wants, you gotta be somebody to have her. Mm-hmm. You gotta be the star basketball player, and I'm not that guy. And in the second verse, I got a homeboy that's dealing drugs and he got money. I wanna have it. I gotta have it. The next song, I don't wanna be another dude that can't. This is Tale of Two Cities. I don't wanna be another dude around here that ain't got nothing. I wanna have things. I'm just an emphasis on things. Mm-hmm. I want things. And then and as you go on, as I go to Hollywood and I get these things, I'm starting to see, like, wait a minute. You know, later in the album, you'll see I start to question, like, yo, well, these things ain't really what I thought. You know what I mean? Because in the song called Hello, I tell you that I don't even have a house to, I don't have a home to put these things in.
Mm.
I got the things, but now there's something missing that it just don't feel right. So it's like, that's when I discover, you know, chronologically through the album, you see the discovery of why love is ultimately what I should have been seeking. You know what I mean? Or maybe not shoulda, because maybe I had to go through that. You know, in my real life, I had to go through these things to realize the importance of love. You know what I mean? I didn't know that before. I thought the other stuff was more important.
Yeah, Sorry.
Go ahead, Jenny.
I have a question about that. I mean, because, you know, you're saying a lot of things before when you're talking about, like, you're evolving and sort of figuring it out. And do you think that you can tell people that and they'll just believe you and, like, change what they're doing? Or do you think that everybody has to figure it out on their own?
I think that you leave breadcrumbs, like,
for the kids.
You leave breadcrumbs for kids or for whoever at whatever point in their life. So I could explain it to somebody right now. It could be two people. There could be three people. Let's say three people. One, I can tell them my story and what I understood about life. And one person might hear that and be like, oh my God, that hits me perfectly right now at this point in my life. That's what I needed, because I'm going through this and I wasn't sure, and this gives me perfect clarity. Oh, I was putting importance on the wrong things. And that person gets it. The second person might hear it, like it, not totally understand it, but like it, and it still doesn't change their life.
Not right then.
Not right then, but you give them a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, they'll come back and hear that differently. With new life experiences, they'll come back and be like, oh my God, that's what he meant, right? And then it'll change them then, later. It'll help them change then. Then you have one person, the third person, who might never get it. They might not ever get the life experience to ever, for that, you know, talk to ever get through to them. You know what I'm saying? And I realized that listening back to Pac, who I always love. But the more I live my life, the more I understand more what he was saying. Every year I go back to Pac. And I mean, I'm on him more than every year. But every new year of my life, I have a new level of understanding. And it's like that with Bob Marley, too. It's like, now as a grown man at 29, just rediscovering Bob, it's like, oh my God. It's like the wisdom of the simplicity of what he was saying can go over your head when you're a kid and you're just singing, don't worry about a thing, every little thing. Like, to a kid, that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
But to a grown man now who's 29 and, like, been stressed about stuff that don't matter, Bob is telling me, like, yo, it's going to be good. It's all good. Like, don't even sweat that. Let it be. The Beatles. You know what I mean? It's like those are simple, potent, wise phrases that stand the test of time because they hold truth. But the truth falls on deaf ears. There's some saying, like, the truth is, it can't be heard to, like, ears that aren't ready to accept it, or some type of wild phrase, but that truth holds true. It's like, if you're not ready to accept my truth, it's not going to connect with you. But if you are, it could be potent.
You know what hip hop has that, you know, what you said is really key, because it wasn't until just last year that I looked at the title of the song, the Bob Marley song, Three Little Birds, and I was like, oh my God. You know, it took me 43 years to be like, Three Little Birds? So I know
what
you mean.
No, what you mean? Tell me what you mean by that. Well, is there something I'm missing?
No, well, it's just, even in that song, you know, that he's singing, the song that you referenced, it is a beautiful song. You may not experience enough of life to even appreciate the message, but then you look at the title of the song, in of itself, just takes it to another level.
Right.
So,
like, yo, Three Little Birds told him the wisest thing you could ever be told.
This morning, smile with the rising sun. Three little birds pitch by my doorstep, singing sweet songs of melodies pure and true, saying,
this is my message to you. Woo-hoo.
So, but one thing that I think hip hop has that's a little step beyond, and which helps the art form, is that you are poetic, but I think you can be a bit more descriptive because you're not locked into a melody, you know, of such.
Exactly.
So I think when, you know, you have a song like Love Yours, just in the title alone, it's like, what do you mean? You know, and obviously you listen to the song and it becomes clear and apparent, but even yet and still, you might not be there enough to even appreciate the things that you have to the dynamic that you're speaking about in your records. But I definitely love the evolution that you continue to express. You know, it's just unquestioning.
Thank you, man.
Of life experience, like A Tale of Two Cities, and just like, even, you know, when you have that that nice watch, you know, when you say that, and then you go throw your hands in the air, just even hearing that right now at this time is I took it a different way.
That's crazy.
Just, you know, the whole painting of it. I wanted to know, and Franny, you cut me off at any time.
By the way, I want to speak on your comment. I was waiting for you to finish. I'm loving you're absolutely right. Like, in terms of hip hop, the clarity and the descriptiveness in the poetry is like, you know, it you can get right to the heart of the message when there is a message, of course. But you can get much more descriptive and therefore much clearer in your intentions and in the picture that you're painting. So Love Yours, like you said, is like, I feel like the conversation that we just had about getting through to the three people. I feel like those three people have the most the highest opportunity to understand a song like Love Yours, because of the way it's written and because of the way the message is so clear and potent, and the way, like, I feel like those three people would all get it on a song like that. And it's because, like you said, hip-hop, rap music is a different art form. It's nothing vague about that song. While the message is universal and clear and needed and necessary and, like, and uplifting because it's empowering and telling you the secret to life, it's very clear. It ain't like Bob where it's kind of vague and it's like, oh, don't worry about a thing. It's like, no, it's right to the heart. This will get you this, and this will get you you know what I mean? It's like, it's very, it gets right to the core of what I've experienced or whatever. So that's a very interesting point I think you're making that separates hip-hop from other genres and other art forms. And that's why I feel like it's so important. And that's why it hurts me for it to be, I don't want to be one of those guys like, oh man, hip hop is in the worst state. But it just hurts, you know, to not be inspired constantly by hip hop artists, because we are the ones that got the real power in the pen. We could say so much. Love Yours. Love Yours. No such thing.
No such thing as a life that's better than yours. No such thing as a life that's better than yours. Love Yours. No such thing as a life that's better than yours. No such thing, no such thing.
Heart beating fast, let a nigga know that he alive. Fake niggas mad, snakes in the grass, let a nigga know that he arrived. Don't be sleeping on your level, cause it's beauty in the struggle, nigga.
Beauty, goes for all y'all.
It's beauty in the struggle, nigga.
Beauty,
let me explain. Yeah. It's beauty in the struggle, ugliness in the success. Hear my words and listen to my signal of distress. I grew up in the city and know sometimes we had less. Compared to some of my niggas down the block, man, we were blessed. And life can't be no fairy tale, no once upon a time. But I be goddamned if a nigga don't be trying. So tell me, mama, please, why you be drinking all the time? Does all the pain he brought you still linger in your mind? Cause pain still lingers on mine. On the road to riches, listen, this is what you find. The good news is, nigga, you came a long way. The bad news is, nigga, you went the wrong way. Think being broke was better.
No such thing as a life that's better than yours. No such thing as a life that's better than yours.
Think being broke was better.
Life that's better than yours. No such thing, no such thing.
For what's money without happiness? Or hard times without the people you love? Though I'm not sure what's about to happen next, I ask for strength from the Lord up above. Cause I've been strong so far, but I can feel my grip loosening. Quick, do something before you lose it for good. Get it back and use it for good. And touch the people how you did like before. I'm tired of living with demons cause they always inviting more. Think being broke was better. Now I don't mean that phrase with no disrespect to all my niggas out there living in debt. Cash and minimal checks, Turn on the TV, see a nigga Rolex, and fantasize about a life with no stress. I mean this shit sincerely. And as a nigga who was once in your shoes, living with nothing to lose, I hope one day you hear me. Always gonna be a bigger house somewhere, but nigga, feel me. Long as the people in that motherfucker love you dearly. Always gonna be a whip that's better than the one you got. Always gonna be some clothes that's fresher than the ones you rock. Always gonna be a bitch that's better out there on the tours. But you ain't never gonna be happy till you love yours.
No such thing as a life that's better than yours.
Love yours.
No such thing as a life that's better than yours.
Love yours.
No such thing as a life that's better than yours.
Love yours.
No such thing, no such thing.
Heart beating fast, let a nigga know that he alive. Fake niggas mad, snakes in the grass, let a nigga know that he arrived.
The closest comparison is probably Kendrick's I, in the directness and the simplicity, and also even the combination of melody and rapping.
Right.
I mean, you know, people know that you guys are partners in some ways, and do you have conversations about that message or conversations?
Actually, yeah. Actually, we do. Like it's like this. We're artists and we have our own careers or whatever the case is. But when we do get to link and converse, like for instance, probably the last ill conversation we had was on a flight back from Australia, probably to LA or wherever we was going. We was in Australia basically on a flight, and it was just like the convo was everything I'm talking about right now that ended up on my album. I was telling him because I was in the middle of making the album. And I had the direction, and I knew, A, what my life was about now and what I've understood as a man, you know what I mean? But I'm telling him, too, like, yo, this is what I found out. Like, I had to go through it, and I figured out this ain't important. So I'm telling him these things. Mm-hmm. And then we also having a deeper conversation. Even that, it's crazy you bring up I. That artwork right there, I don't know for sure. I don't know what his album is on or whatever. I can't wait to hear it. But that artwork, I know for a fact. You can ask him. I haven't asked him yet. I would love to know what he's talking about, what he says. That artwork has to be a direct result of the conversation we had in Australia. Not the hands. I just feel like, and I was telling him this on the plane, I feel like he is the one, first of all, I read around that time, this is how the conversation came up. I read a book, Monster Cody, which is, if you don't know, he's like notorious gangbanger from L.A.
Okay.
Right? Like, huge, well-respected, OG. His book is ridiculous. Like, you know, the story is crazy. It's unbelievable. It's like the Wild West out there when gangs got popping. And he was coming up in a different era of gangbanging or whatever. The book is unbelievable. So I started telling him about the book. You know, obviously he knows the story. Everybody in L.A. know Monster Cody's story. But I'm just like, even Monster Cody acknowledges in the book how silly gangbanging is. But it's a trap. It's a cycle. You know what I mean? But it's literally the dumbest thing you've ever. Black people killing black people for a street. Literally for the street you grew up on and what color your brother was associated with or your uncle was associated with, your pops was associated with. So reading, you know, I'm not from L.A. We got gangbangers in Carolina, but it's like, I almost laugh when I think about it because I'm like, how did this happen? How did it spread all the way over here? Now, you know what I'm saying? But regardless, I'm telling him that, yo, you are the one.
I know what part you're talking
about. You can be the one to end it. But it's silly at this point. Like, it's silly. We can't be. First of all, no black man should be killing a black man, period, anymore. Period. Point blank. And absolutely not for a color, not for a street, not for a neighborhood, not for path, but it's a cycle. You know what I mean? It's like, yo, your uncle killed my uncle, your uncle killed my brother, your cousin killed my cousin. And it's a cycle that's hard to get out of. But I was telling him, if it's anybody that can do it, it's him. You know what I mean? Because he's from Compton, he's from there. He has the power. And I think that goes to the point of like, we're in a time right now where people look into celebrities to be that voice. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong, because I don't expect any man to do nothing that is as hard as him. But I feel like we are the only ones, not meaning me and Kendrick, but I'm saying we as people in the light that have the eyes and the ears of the young people. It's like we have a responsibility. If it's in our heart, we have a responsibility to tell them and show them the way and not make money off of playing into the stereotypes. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, Kendrick don't do that, I don't do that, whatever, but it's like, there's so many rap, I don't want it, it's not cool no more to rap about being a drug dealer. Mm. When you ain't sold drugs in 10 years, 20 years, it's not cool no more. It's, you don't do it. You don't make your money no more off the street if you ever did in the first place. So why are you still rapping about it? Why are you still inspiring? It just, I'm angry about it. So to get back to the point, when I saw the I artwork, I got excited. You know what I mean? Because just that little message is so strong. And I feel like Kendrick got the voice and he can do it. He could be the one to really let and wake him up and be like, yo, man, this shit, stop. This shit, we got to stop this. Because they respect him. People respect artists and poets. You know what I mean? And he has the credibility because he's from there. He ain't banging, but they know you represent us. You are us. So he can speak to them. Just same way that I could speak to, you know, somebody from where I'm from and let them know the same or something similar if they going down the wrong path. But I feel like it ain't enough of us trying. Mm. You know what I'm saying? And it's frustrating. It's too much of us trying to make money and a career off of the same cycle. You know what I mean? Of the victim. We celebrating being victims. And that was cool to me before. It ain't cool to me no more. It's like I can't even celebrate that no more.
Well, I think someone has to be courageous and just like the, you know, little breadcrumbs, you know, if it's just, you know, one and then two, you and Kendrick are talking, to know that that's the type of conversations you guys are having is inspiring. And to know that, you know, through that conversation, you put out a record like you did. I find Forest Hills Drive to be fearless. And I was commenting to a friend asking me about it. I said, yo, he just banging on people. He's like, who you banging on? I'm like, yo, the system.
The system, dog. The system. Whew.
What is the system? Who is the system?
America is the system. Capitalism is the system. Mm. It's the system that tells us that we need more. There's billions of people in the world, hundreds of millions in America. You know how intelligent we are as human beings and, like, how powerful we are as human beings? And every day, if I walk past you on the streets in New York, I could be 100% sure that your life, that you're passing me on the street, and I could be 100% sure that you're living for you. Whatever you're doing, I don't know what your job is, but I know that your purpose is you. It's for you to get more money and for you to be able to survive and eat, period. And your family at tops if it comes to other people. And you can pass me and be sure that I'm doing the same thing, right? So someone makes something that's amazing for the world. Let's say it's a phone with a video camera on it. The world actually needs it. It does provide a great service to the world, right? That person's a genius. Thank you for contributing that to the world. I know you contributed it to make money. That was your goal, but you did it. Thank you. Now, the hundreds of other million Americans, let's say there's a million in the phone industry, instead of trying to contribute something that also helps the world, their goal now, their intention, is to take the same idea that this person, their energy goes to taking the same idea that this person just made of it. And I use a dumb example, but this just gives you an example of like how it works. This person made a cell phone with a video camera. Now, so many other people who are smart and intelligent and have energy to provide for the world are using their energy to make a cheaper version of what this person just made to capitalize on the money. They're not offering nothing to the world. Mm. And that's like how 90...
A girlier version.
A girlier version.
Or like a tougher
right.
version.
Exactly. Or, yeah. Just a different version of what's already been created. Not something that's needed or necessary, something that's cheaper and more profitable. So that's the system that we're living in. Why? If the system is pumping to you, you need the new. Yeah, you got that one, but you don't got this one. You got the 5, but you don't got the 6. You got the 2014, but you ain't got the 2015. You got the 60-inch, but you ain't got the 60-inch LED with the laser light. Like, you don't got the 3D model, but the world don't need that. But everybody's spending their time providing the world with things that, A, they don't need, and B, are terrible for them. Why? So they can survive. And it's not the people's fault. It's like the people just trying to survive. You know what I mean? But it's like, that's the system right there. When you ask what's the system, that's the system. You know what I mean? That ultimately, that's it. That's the system.
Wow. You make a quieter album.
You say what?
If you make a quieter album, it's like so shocking.
Oh, right. Right. People need more. Difference. It's more. You need louder. You need this, that, the third. But it's like, man. But this is these are the type of things I just be thinking about all the time. Like, damn.
What does your mom think about you repurchasing the home?
She's proud, man. She feels like I mean, you gotta think it's I mean, I look at it from her perspective. One, on the surface, I know she's proud. Not even on the surface, just deep down, I know she's proud of her son. And like, but on the other hand, I feel like she looks back like, damn, like, or at one point in time, I know she looked at it as like a mistake, like, wow, like, you know, that was a bad point in my life, and I probably shouldn't have put myself in that position anyways. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's mixed emotions. Yeah. But ultimately, it's pride that her son came and like made that right. Mm. She got wronged, and she got wronged in a situation that, you know, she was in because of her life. You know what I mean? Her life led her to that man. Mm. You know, it's all a cycle. Her upbringing led her to, you know, my mom was came from a house of 9 children. Wow. Poor, 9 children, 8 brothers and sisters. They raised themselves. My grandma used to work nights, the night shift, so she wouldn't have to be home with all these kids. You know what I mean? Like, no inspiration or like no motivation or confidence given to her. So everybody's life is a cycle. I'm realizing that, man. My mom was where she was and ended up who she ended up with because of that. You know what I'm saying? And I am where I am because of things she provided me and offered me. You know what I'm saying? Because she didn't want to repeat. You know, she knew that she didn't get anybody encouraging her. So the thing she made sure she did was like, yo, you going to college. I wasn't going to college because I'm from a college-educated family. I was going to college because I wasn't. You know what I mean? My mom was going to make sure that I went because nobody told her to go. You know what I'm saying? And nobody told her to go take guitar lessons or play the violin or to be artsy. My mom, you see how I'm growing out my hair right now? I thought the other day, I was like, yo, my mom always wanted me to do this. She always wanted me to be like the artsy kid, like with the Lenny Kravitz hair or something, like, you know, because nobody encouraged her to be artsy or to do anything. You know what I'm saying? So, and we all a product, man. So that's how my mom feels. She's proud. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, I think she's a little sad about how that house ended.
Can I tell you that I'm a little bit, I'm probably not supposed to say this, but Note to Self might be my favorite song on that album.
Why shouldn't you say that? Thank you. Why shouldn't you say
that? It's not a song.
Yeah, it was the credits. No, man, thank you very much.
But the way that you shout your mom out.
Thank you. Thank you.
If you ain't listening to this shit, I don't give a fuck, nigga. It's the fucking credits. Don't nobody stay for the movie credits anyways, man. My mama, oh, I love you. I'm so grateful and blessed to have you. Still in my life, a lot of people ain't got their mothers in their life still, and I recognize that I'm blessed. Mama, I love you. Zach, I love you. My pops, I love you.
Thank you, man. No, that was real. I was really like, my mama. Like, that's how I was feeling.
It's like
feeling,
a long yell. I was laughing on the train this morning.
Like, nah, I love that song too. That song sums it all up. I look at that song like the credits were really rolling. Mm. And the message behind that song, like, I got a feeling there's something more, something that holds us together, something that's old as forever. Love. It's like ultimately that's the thing that's keeping this thing moving. Yo, I just found out yesterday, 50-year anniversary of Coltrane, A Love Supreme.
Yeah.
Do you know what that means for me? Mm. Right there? The fact that my album came out on the same, and remember, we were saying everything happens for a reason, like, and I wanted to put it out in September, but that didn't work. Then November didn't work, and December 9th just happened to be the date. And wow. The fact that that's the 50th anniversary of A Love Supreme, I'm not taking that lightly. Like, I'm really taking that as a sign from God, like that everything literally happened the right way and the way it was supposed to happen. Because ultimately, A Love Supreme, what was he saying? God is the love supreme. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, that's what I'm saying. Ultimately, appreciate what you have. Be thankful to God. Be grateful to God. Whatever you think God is. If you don't believe in God, something more. Substance. You know what I mean? Something, not the material things. yourself, like inside. There's something greater than you. You know what I mean? So like, ultimately, that's, you know, that's what the album is saying. So when I found that, I flipped.
I got two little other questions about that song.
Okay.
You said thank you to Roc Nation because it was a scary idea.
Oh, for sure.
Why was it scary?
Because we wanted to, we did it, but it's not an easy pitch telling your record label that you want to put out an album with no singles and that you only want to announce 3 weeks before and you don't want to do any promotion.
And you want to pay for samples.
And you want to pay for, yeah, you still got to, you know, they've paid money for studio. You got to pay the samples. It's a scary idea.
Okay.
You know, so obviously we had to ask them to trust us. And by the way, they were very supportive and not scared at all. At least they didn't show it to us. But I know they were definitely like, okay, we're just going to hope this works out. You know what I'm saying? But yeah, that's why. This is not the traditional way of putting out an album.
And also B. Nolan.
B. Nolan.
So who's this guy? He's the driver?
No, he's not the driver. Brian Nolan. He now does, I think he's more like sports related, but he works at Columbia. And he was the radio guy, one of the radio reps. So,
got it.
So for different regions have different radio reps. Rhythmic radio, urban radio for the South, urban radio for the Midwest.
Yeah.
B. Nolan was our rhythmic guy for, I don't know, a bunch of places. And so, you know, when we drop Who Dat and all these other singles, you go to you fly to the market, you go to the radio station, you meet the program directors, and you always have a radio rep from the label that knows all these people,
right,
as the middleman to, like, introduce you and, like, tell you. But with us, we were so interested in the business, not even the business, the music game. Like, how does this work? Like,
yeah.
how's our song getting played, or why is it not getting played as much? Or what can we do to get it played more? And he was the guy that we would always be asking questions. And he will always explain, like, okay, this program director right here, this station is a little slow to jump on it, but you got to understand, they're going off of research. He explained to us how radio works.
And
I could tell you all about the radio game up and down, you know, because of him and people like him from the label that were, like, giving us a lot of game about that.
But you don't think this album's going to be on the radio?
No, it'll be on the radio.
Okay.
It'll be on the radio. There's definitely songs that the radio can play, but I'm not basing and wasn't basing my album coming out off of that. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't like that. I don't like that. Putting out a single for 3 months and begging you to buy my album.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to do that. I want to put it out and then work it from there. Like, you know, I believe in the music. I don't have to beg you. I'm grateful to, like, have a fan base now that, like, believes and hopefully, you know, they love the album. And that's all I really need at this point. I don't need, not that I don't need radio. I definitely need radio. They're a huge impact, but I don't need to sell my album for 4 months in advance, basically.
Right.
I don't want to do that anymore.
So why don't you want to do interviews?
Because I was hoping that the music, which it does, I wanted the music to speak for itself. You know what I'm saying? I wanted that message to speak for itself. But then I realized I would be doing it a disservice to the music, to not promote it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I would be doing myself a disservice by not allowing myself to speak, and people a disservice, because there's people that I could say one thing during this interview and it might connect to somebody and be like, ah.
Absolutely.
So I'm doing them a disservice by not getting it out there.
It's a strong album, and your presence, you know, as an artist speaks and it comes across, but your presence, you know, outside of the art also speaks volumes. And I think that in this time period where it just seems like people are looking for a leader. And I'm not saying that, you know, trying to push you up into that position to lead, but I think your persona and what you speak on, what you stand for, is important. And I think you have to, you know, do interviews and be out there and let the people touch you and speak to you.
Thank you, man.
It's motivating.
Thank you. I feel you. I feel you. And people have told me that, and I'm listening. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. I'm listening. 4 years ago, I was way more just politically correct, trying to say the right things. Like, you know, not really trying to. Now it's like, nah, man. Like, I don't know how long I'm going to be here. You know what I'm saying? I want to, like, get whatever's on my chest off my chest when it feels right and just do what feels right and do what my heart, you know, what's in my heart, basically. Say what's in my heart. Say what's on my mind. So that's my my whole thing from now on is like, yo, just say it, man. Just do it. If that's how you feel, Ferguson, perfect example. It's like, I just wanted to go. And I got, okay, I can afford a ticket. I can go. I'm just going to go. That's it. There was no thought. There was no, there wasn't any second guessing. It was just, let's go.
So, the only other question I have, I don't know how many more you have, Franny.
Not many, and we're going to get pulled
wrapping
pretty
up.
Soon. Yeah.
Cool. Saint-Tropez.
Yes.
What musically were you listening to get you in the headspace for that song?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I wanted to know that for like the whole album, actually.
Right. Well, thank you. Thank you. I couldn't tell you specifically because I did the beat. I did that beat way before. I did that beat early in the year, like maybe February. I didn't know what to do with the beat. I sent it to Kendrick, like, here, man, take this for your album, right? No, matter of fact, I sat on it for a while. That particular song, I sat on it for a while, made the album in L.A., came back to New York to, like, just finish up the album and tweak the album. And then while I was in New York, I sent Kendrick the beat, like, yo, I got something for your album here. He hit me back like, yo, he was loving it. Like, yo, it's perfect, classic, thank you. You know, and then, like, a week later, I'm on the plane or in my hotel room, and I got, like, a shuffle on my Logic. I got a Logic folder, basically, a Logic playlist that plays all my beats. So I was just going through it randomly, and that beat came up. And that day I had melodies. Roll up and smoke my sins away. I like to go to Saint-Tropez. Maybe I go, maybe I stay. I had that, so I recorded on my laptop. And I'm thinking to myself, like, oh, no, because I'm in love with it. But I've just sent it. Mind you, I just sent it to Dot. I just sent him this joint. So I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I don't want to, like, make that phone call. But I couldn't help it. Like, so when I got back to the studio maybe 4 days later, I just recorded it. And I just called him, like, yo, please tell me you didn't record that beat yet. Like, please tell me you don't have, like, a classic song sitting on that beat. Because I'm about to, like, I don't, because if he had a song, I wouldn't even have took it. I wouldn't have took it back. Mm. So I was praying that he didn't, because I really loved it. And I knew what it was. I knew the scene that it was, and I needed it to be. And he was like, nah, it's cool. I only got, like, a verse on it. I'm like, you in love with it? He was like, like, I ain't in love with it. I'm just playing around. So, you know, he let me get that back. He was like, you owe me, though. You know what I mean? So that was a cool moment.
It's a definite mood, you know, kind of a song. And it reminds me of, like, blues and jazz so hard. Mm. And even the way you came on top of it, I'm like, man, like, you in a zone, and it's a great place. So I was just wondering if it was something that you were listening to, but I just love that you feel uninhibited to just go there like that.
Yeah, thank you, man. I can't really pinpoint it to any specific thing that I was listening to. You know, I just, it's really just a product of being free, like we talked about, yeah, and being open and like allowing. That's the best creativity, is allowing, because it always wants to come out. You know what I mean? It's just, yeah, if you allow it to come out.
I heard, I don't remember if it was Quincy Jones or Stevie Wonder. I think Stevie Wonder that said, you got to leave space for God in the room, mm-hmm, when you record it.
For real. That's real. That's what allowing is to me. It's literally letting God do the work. My best songs that I've ever written, or at least the best time I've ever had writing them, came from just allowing. It felt like I was not writing. It felt like I was not at the wheel. Hmm. I was just like the scribe, you know what I mean? Like just I was like the prophet Muhammad or something. I was like the instrument, like not comparing myself to him, obviously. I'm not trying to say that. I'm just saying like the way that God can speak through people. And it's like, you know, art is like that. I feel like when you're in your best zone, you're connected to a higher power. You're connected to God, and you're not trying. There's no effort. You're just allowing. You know what I mean? And that, I feel like that's ultimately the greatest, obviously the greatest source of inspiration. That's the closest you're going to get to God. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Is those moments. You know what I mean? When you're truly tapped in. That's how I feel.
I'm going to leave you with this, it's a book called Love is the Wine. I think you might like that book.
Love is the Wine?
Love is the down. Wine.
The Wine.
Wine. That's W-I-N-E.
Crazy. That's crazy. Writing it down right now. Text myself. That's how I send myself notes.
I think
it's a great album. This is my number one for 2014.
Thank you, man. That means a lot, bro. And I don't want to, like, I feel weird talking about my own stuff, you know what I mean? But it's true. I can't help it. I feel like this, you said Love is the Wine. I feel like this album gets better like a fine wine. Like, with time, the more I listen, the more I fall in love with it, and the better it gets. Like, I can't really say that about many of the projects I've done, definitely none of the albums I've done. And on another level from the mixtapes, this thing grabs me even more the more I listen. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like a year from now it'll sound even better, and 5 years from now it'll sound even better, and 10 years from now. That's how I feel.
Me too.
Agreed.
But thank you.
And it's like, it's not the sad songs that like make me cry. It's the love yourself songs.
Mm.
That's how you know it's working.
Thank you. Apparently, by the way, I don't want nobody to sleep on apparently. I just have to throw that out there. When you get the album, whoever's listening, enjoy. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Word. Thank you.